Welcome back, everyone. It seems this summer really got away from me with searches, weekend training events, teaching, and even importing a couple of personal protection dogs for Heimdall Canine Services. All of that resulted in quite a long and unexpected break in episodes. So I thank you for sticking around and joining me for episode 7 of Canine Top Tales. Just a reminder, this is a podcast to showcase and honor the lives of canine warriors, crime fighters, protectors, and rescuers. I am your host, Sonia Nordstrom, a retired special agent of the FBI and 25-year handler of search and rescue recovery canines, coming to you from the Heimdall Ranch in the beautiful mountains of Utah. Today's episode's guest is likely one of the most experienced disaster response search and rescue dog handlers and trainers in the U.S. As a member of the FEMA and State Department Office of Foreign Disaster Aid, she has traveled the world for more than two decades with her SAR canines, responding to earthquakes, bombings, hurricanes, and mudslides in Turkey, Nairobi, Haiti, Taiwan, and throughout the United States. So please enjoy this interview with my guest, Sonia Heritage. Sonia, welcome so much to Canine Top Tales, and I appreciate you taking the time on a Sunday afternoon to talk with me.
Hey, it's fun to be here.
So why don't you, you've got such a vast and lengthy history. We could spend about a day and a half just talking about that. But I will say that you've probably been to more international disasters than many and had many different experiences with your dogs, worked numerous dogs, and have also promoted and trained numerous dogs that are in the field. So could you just tell us a little bit about your history and sort of the decades of work that you've done, how you've kind of progressed through the whole thing?
So yeah, I mean, I've been doing it over 20 years. And really, I mean, I've got to say that I've been pretty lucky in the way that things have played out for me. And it really is about the luck of who you meet, when you meet them. So I was very lucky to have a mentor that changed my life, and his name's Garrett Dyer, and he's the one who recruited me for Virginia Task Force 1, which is Fairfax County, Virginia, and they're one of two international teams that work for FEMA, but also USAID out of the State Department, and I was on his wilderness team, and man, I didn't know anything. You know, I went and I got this puppy, which you and I both know, what are you going to do with a puppy, right? You know, like, but I really hunted for a dog that was working line, and, you know, and I found one, and I wanted to get a female because I had, you know, I wasn't sure if I could handle a male, right? And I went, I had picked out the litter, I'd done all that. And I went out to the kennels outside where the pups were. And there was this little fuzzy creature that was like staring at me, like would not stop, just like looking at me at the gate. And so I asked about,
all your puppy selection went out the window.
Yeah, totally, right? And so, yeah, forget it. And so, you know, the woman, Joyce Burdett, who is amazing, she said, like, oh, that's a male. You don't want a male. You know, we're going to go, let me go, you know, grab the females. And so I looked at them and everything was great. I mean, they were all wonderful. But this guy just kept looking at me like an old soul, you know, which is that really how you want to pick out your puppy? Is it? No, right?
Well, it worked out for you.
It did. And you know Otto. So, he was my first working dog. And he opened so many doors for me. He was exactly what I needed at the time. He wasn't over the top drive, but he had strong drives. He had amazing footing and was just so biddable, you know, like ridiculous. And go ahead.
I have to go back just a little bit. Mm-hmm. So most people that start in search and rescue don't come in searching for the dog for the job. They come in with the dog they have. Mm-hmm. So what was it about your background that when you decided, okay, I'm going to do this, had you been working with the team for a while first before mm-hmm. getting the dog?
So I found this amazing book because I was living in California and I moved back to Maryland, which is where I'm from. And I found this amazing book, A Dog Lover's Guide to Maryland. And in it, there were all kinds of things for agility and what have you, but it had search and rescue teams, local teams. And this was, you know, Oklahoma City, it was a light bulb for me. I saw the dogs working there and I said, I was bartending, you know, just living the life, right? And I said, that is exactly what I'm going to do. And I had read a bunch of stuff. You know, I was in the DC area. So Parade Magazine had things about handlers and, there was just a lot of media about it, but it was the first time that I found out that a civilian could work a dog in a, you know, a critical working environment scenario and do some good. And so, that is what was driving me. And so I had gone around to a couple wilderness teams without a dog. And I'd had a very high drive. My husband or my boyfriend had a very high drive shepherd that kind of taught me what all that was about. And we lost her just before Oklahoma City. And so, you know, that was kind of, I was already into the working stuff a little bit with her. And then, you know, so I knew what I wanted to do. And it was focus, drive, boom. You know, I started doing EMT classes at the college, you know, was one of the top folks in that class. I went to the fire department and said, hey, I'm going to do this. And I started with this puppy at a wilderness thing. Now, I had gone to Search and Rescue Dogs in Maryland was the one I decided on. And Garrett Dyer was the trainer on that team. And I got a real good idea of what I wanted and what I didn't want, you know, by watching dogs on all these teams. I knew I wanted a high drive shepherd. I knew, you know, what I wanted it to look like. Because I was lucky enough.
I just want to say that is a huge
right? Right?
That in and of itself, going out, knowing what it looks like, mm-hmm. knowing what it needs to be, and then getting your dog.
Yeah. It's huge.
That's why you've done as well as you've done, because you've started off on the right foot from the get-go.
Well, like I said, you know, I've been really lucky, you know, and so, you know, Garrett made it. There was a dog there named Kudo, Kudo, and he was my, that was the dog. You know what I mean? I was like,
yeah,
I like what he does. He was fast. He was accurate. He was like intense, you know, and a sweetheart to boot. And I was like, okay, there's my bar. And if you never yep. saw that bar, you know, early on, then all you have as a new person is the best dog you've ever seen. You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
And if
yeah.
that
and
dog.
This is pre-internet. This is pre-internet. No
yeah.
YouTube and Facebook of all these dogs doing incredible things, right?
Right.
So this is what you see is what you get. And it's a big deal.
And when you're brand new, anybody can tell you that their dog is what it should be, you know, like, so, but, and that's all, you know, if you've just,
that's all they know.
Exactly. You know? And so I was so gifted and so lucky to have that bar set for me. And then I was lucky again that the pup that I got, which, you know, it was a crapshoot that he and this was a big dog, you know, like he was not a small dog. He was about 90 pounds and a coated shepherd, you know, you know, just exactly, honestly, what I needed. But he went out and he did the job. And the other thing is, when people saw him, they remembered him and they remembered me. And so he opened so many doors for me, you know. But we had gotten certified, and just after, I mean, I want to say it was just a few months after we got certified for FEMA that the embassy bombing happened. And we, like, I'm just going about my day. And
this is Nairobi.
This is Nairobi. Yeah.
Nairobi in embassy 98. Bombing. Mm-hmm. 98. Okay. Just to get people on board.
Yeah. And so, and I had only been doing this like a year, you know, but we moved forward quickly and we got certified very quickly. And I got a call, like, I don't know, 10 o'clock in the morning or something. And it was Garrett. And he said, so what are you doing? You know? And I'm like, I'm like saying all this, you know, stuff that means nothing, you know, like, and he goes, you know, right. Yeah. No, I just finished working, you know, a dog and blah, 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 you know, like, and do you really want to know? And like, and he goes, want to go to Africa? And I was like, what? And he goes, the embassy bombing. I go, I was watching it. He goes, how fast can you get to Andrews? And I said, I can be there in 45 minutes, you know? And he was like, go. And so I was like, what? and I had my stuff packed already, thank God, you know? I went there and I met Dewey Perks there, who was my program manager or task force leader, we called him back then. And him and I were the first two to leave to go to the embassy bombing. And we were on a special plane, which was, it was high security. And I want to say it was called the FEST plane, which was, had to deal with embassies and diplomats, you know, just an emergency plane that had, it wasn't like seats inside. There were some, but it was mostly equipment and satellite stuff and, you know, top secret, yada, yada. And everybody had a gun except like Dewey and I.
You had a German Shepherd. So you
I had
okay.
a big German Shepherd who was making friends, right? And, but you know how it goes, like, you know, tried to take off once and there was smoke in the cabin and then, you know, came back down.
Had Otto even flown before?
No. He had commercially, you know,
okay.
to certify.
All right.
So,
he had done it.
So
okay.
Yeah. But he was a dog. I mean, you know, you just pointed him at what you wanted and he would adjust on the fly. He was pretty amazing that way. Or, you know, he never let me down ever, which is quite something really, you know. But he So we got on there and we finally went and, you know, and we're looking at all this satellite stuff and we're looking at all these pictures and they're kind of briefing us. And we finally get there, but because of all the stop and goes, we weren't the first to get there. Like, actually, the rest of the team beat us.
First to deploy, but last to get there.
That is correct.
Last yeah. Okay.
Right. So, but we got there and we got set up. And, you know, I had not been on a deployment, you know, like I'd done a lot of wilderness in that year, you know, because we were a pretty busy team that way. But I hadn't, and I'd been on a lot of rubble piles, but I hadn't been to the real thing. And what hit me, you know, was the smell, you know, like that exploded concrete, you know, black powder. There's an odor, you know, like once you smell it, then, you know, it's the same all the time, you know, unless it's like a hurricane or something like that. But if you've got an earthquake, it's the same. If you've got, you know, although I will say that was a lot more like black powderish, you know, but, you know, and we smelled that from blocks away. And it was just like, wow. And that has stuck with me big time. And so, the thing about the embassy was that The embassy was hit, yes, and people died, absolutely, and it was horrible. But even worse was the building next to it. And that was the Afunde House. And it was had a bank in it. It had, you know, all kinds of office buildings and where Haitians worked. So it was down. I mean, it was annihilated. And the Israelis were working there. So that was ongoing, and it was really bad. And so we had a lot of we hadn't hooked up with the Israelis yet, but because we were focused on the embassy and they were keeping the Israelis out, so they were waiting for us. And so we went in there and we worked it, and it was crazy because first off, we were being escorted in there by people that worked there and were there when it happened, but they weren't injured, or they just showed up, you know, and their friends were all, you know.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
Yeah, and you could tell, like, this gentleman who I picture, you know, like, I remember his face completely, and he was in shock, you know. But he was kind of taking us around and, you know, kind of giving us the lay of the land. And you just felt so bad for the guy and for, you know, everything that was happening. But, you know, so you're looking at safety and you're looking at, you know, everything. And the windows are all blasted out, you know, and it's a typical kind of embassy building. But And below us, outside of where the windows are all these rescuers and Haitians, not Haitians.
And you said Haitians earlier. I know, that's a different one. Haitians
in
Nairobi?
Yeah, I know, right? Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, there are all these people, you know, like, working down there, and the dogs are getting that odor. And I remember my teammate, Elizabeth Kreitler, and her dog, Garrett, he jumped, he was like on odor, and he jumped right up on that, that wall. And he was so nimble footed, and he just worked all the way down and then came back. And we both just about had a heart attack, you know, that he was just going to go, cause we were on the third floor. But anyway, so we worked in there, and it was, you know, it wasn't a huge area to work.
How rubbly was it? I mean, how many stories was the building? How collapsed was it? Could you have a lot of voids, or what was going on?
It was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of ceiling tile. The building held up well. You know, what was crazy is the elevators were blown out, you know, like they were completely, they weren't blown off, but they were completely curved from the percussion of the bomb.
Wow.
You know, and just that pressure that did that to them. And you saw a lot of that, you know, like you'd have books like piled up against the wall. You know, where did they come from? From everywhere else in the building. You know what I mean? Like, and they just ended up stacked like crazy. But there was, you know, there was the bloody handprints and all that. And you just, you know, you really got a feeling for not only, you know, how many lives were lost, but also how dangerous it was to just let your dog loose in there, you know.
Well, and at that time, was Otto dual purpose, cadaver and live?
He did cadaver. He did that, but he only did it in the wilderness, right?
Okay.
He had never, like on the rubble, he was single-minded. Okay. You know, that's what it's going to be, right?
And how did this environment compare with his training? Was it an adjustment? Was he like, hey, wait, this is different. Everybody feels different. Everybody's acting differently. It's way more noise. Did he transition?
You know, both of us were nervous for sure, you know, and I remember at one point when he was working, there was an open elevator shaft. And so I had somebody, you know, we had people over that way, and I couldn't see Otto anymore. And I go like, hey, does anybody have eyes on him? And they're all like, no, I don't see him. No, I don't see him. And my heart dropped, because I'm like, freaking elevator shaft, you know what I mean? Like, yes, like who's doing that, you know? Yeah, and and he had like gone down to the next level, you know.
Oh, God.
It scared the, I mean, I thought, you know, first search, first deployment, and I thought, you know, and there he goes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, as someone who has lost a dog,
I know,
I know what happened. I can't work any open second story. I can't mm-hmm. work, like, we have a library that we've gone into. Mm-hmm. I will not work on an upper deck with just a railing. I can't do it.
I understand. I can't do it after that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
because they go, they follow their nose, they close their eyes, they have no depth perception, and they go. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So
yep.
it's not unusual. And like when you talked about the other one, I'm thinking, oh God, don't jump.
I know, right?
Don't jump, don't jump.
Yeah. Ugh, because you can't take that back. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, and you know, that's the thing with disaster. It's like, you know, you've got to let your dog work, but you also, man, it's just, you know, a lot of it's just not safe. The dogs do well, you know, like, I mean, it's rare for something catastrophic to happen with these dogs. But, you know, once you feel your, that pucker, you know, like.
Your heart in your throat.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like, then yeah, so that was like a big deal with there, and because so many of the folks that lived and worked in a Funde house and in Nairobi, they were not really happy with us that our embassy was the target and their building was the, you know, destroyed.
Yeah, was the victim.
Yeah, and so there was a lot of a lot of threats, you know, so they were moving us, you know, every couple of days and doing all, you know, the threat assessments and things that they had to do. But yeah, you know, like, no, we didn't find anybody alive. We did, there were survivors in the Afunde house. Not many, you know, not many, but we didn't find any. But the interesting thing was that, you know, we had cleared the floors and done all that and came back for the morning shift. And at the briefing, Garrett came up and he said, like, we need to search third floor again. And he goes, I've got people saying that they smell, you know, human remains, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're like, man, we totally cleared that. I mean, there's like nowhere, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I know, but we're going to, you know, we're going to go up there and work it. And there was this area. It was like a kitchen, little kitchen kind of an area with countertops and stuff. And kind of like a window that you would serve through. And he goes that they say it's coming from here, you know. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I send Otto and I have him jump up on the thing and, you know, and Otto's like, yeah, no. And Garrett saying, you know, the dogs are like, nothing's in there. Right. And he goes, well, we're taking every brick out of here because they need to see this. And it was, a refrigerator and a freezer, you know, yep. with stuff that had stopped, you know, and it's like, if you had the nose, then you wouldn't need us. And so Heidi Yamaguchi, who was one of the, she was another mentor of mine. She had a dog that was HR. Yep. And she, your people had her working, the car that drove, you know, tried to get into the garage underneath, and luckily it didn't get in all the way, that had the explosives in it, and she worked it and got, you know, remains out of there. So so they were able to put all that together. But yeah, that was you know, that was kind of crazy. Like, just, it was kind of epic, the whole thing, you know. It wasn't like the most work by any means, you know, that I've had on deployments, but it was, you know, it was the first one, and there was just, it was,
well, the exposure, the journey, the total culture change.
Oh yeah.
The hostility, the dynamics, the numerous countries, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Let alone, and then you're there with your dog. Just be a good boy.
I know, right?
And then that's what it comes down to, be a good boy.
Yeah. And then Garrett pulled me and he said, you know, we're going to go do something else. And it, and we had to go to the USAID, a building that they had for the foreign nationals. We had to go there to talk to all the families of the, I know. And I was just like, wow, okay. Yeah. And try to explain to them, you know, like how the dogs work and all this, and how is it even possible, you know, that like there's nothing left of some of these people, you know, and it was just, it was very humbling and very, you know, kind of made things very real. And
baptism by fire.
That's it.
Without,
you know, felt it for real, you know, and saw these family members just having a hard time, you know? So, I think that was a really good experience for me, you know, just to kind of bring it all home, you know? Yeah. It's easy to go somewhere and do your job and not really see the impact sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it was, you know, that was something. So,
but I mean, for the dog to be, you know, what's it, 36 hours or whatever that it probably took you to travel from tarmac to tarmac, and then he's got to hit the ground running, and it's like no sleep and staying somewhere different every night. And
yeah, it was, well, actually, I want to say it was like from DC, it was like 19 hours, I want to say. Yeah.
Well, that's not bad.
Uh-uh. Nope.
That's not bad.
Nope. So it
was still.
It was, I know. But yeah, you know, like, I mean, he was only 2 years, you know, just over two, you know, so he was just a baby. And interestingly, you know, you talk about the highs and the lows. We came back from that and we had both my dog, and both Otto and Garrett, the dog, bloated within 2 weeks after that deployment. You know, and Otto and I were supposed to go to this awards ceremony at the State Department. The whole team was going, it wasn't just for us. And instead of going there, I was taking my dog
for emergency from,
yeah, you know what I mean? And he was on the table, you know, and it was just like, oh my God, how quickly things, you know, turn. Yeah. But you know, we got him there in time. They took his spleen out and he was good to go. Never bothered him at all. Never skipped a beat on it. So I was very, very lucky and grateful.
Your host, Sonia, is the owner and trainer for Sonia's Dog Training and Heimdallr Canine Services. Sonia's Dog Training provides detection, nose work, scent work, and SAR workshops and seminars, as well as one-on-one training for the family pet. Remote sessions via Zoom or FaceTime and telephone consults are also available. Heimdallr Canine Services is a supplier of top quality canines for personal, family, and executive protection. Heimdallr conducts hands-on selection from the finest breeders and kennels in Europe to locate top-tier dogs selected for their courage, stability, sociability, and health. We are happy to answer any questions you may have regarding adding a protection dog to your home and look forward to hearing from you.
Well, so, oh gosh, and I should have the months in my brain, but I don't anymore. A couple of months after the embassy bombing, Turkey, there was a huge earthquake in Turkey, and it was in Izmit that we went. And so it was like back to back. I don't even think it was, it might have been like 3 weeks, but so we were back on a plane heading out to Turkey. And that was a pretty epic deployment. You know, it was, there was a lot of damage. And I mean, entire neighborhoods, and you could just look I mean, I've got pictures across the landscape, and you know, it was just annihilated. There were definitely people trapped, and Virginia Task Force One did a 48-hour blitz as soon as we hit the ground, because there was so much work to do you just went until, you know, until just to, yeah. And as a matter of fact, we had a find there, and I was working with Elizabeth Kreitler and Garrett, the dog, and we trained together all the time. But anyway, we had a find 18 feet deep, stairs that were kind of collapsed. It was weird because they were concrete, but they were collapsed in at the top of this apartment building, I guess, that was down. I mean, it was down, and the dogs were, I mean, you know, one at a time, and I didn't know where it was, and she had worked at first, and I mean, the dogs just kept circling and whining and trying to go down these concrete stairs, and they actually talked to this woman that was down there, and she didn't make it to get out, unfortunately, but both dogs, you know, they were like not going to leave her at all. They didn't bark, but they just were whining and trying to get down. And it was, luckily had an amazing, search team manager, Mike Reagan. He was like, I've seen enough. All right, let's do this, you know? So, that was quite something, but the point being that we had gone so long working that I couldn't even remember where that was. When we finally stopped, they were like, you know, the dogs were right. And I'm like, where? I'm like, I don't even know. I mean, now I put it all together, but I mean, I was so like just exhausted, you know, that I just couldn't put it together at all. And it was making me mad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about you, but I get this incredible focused tunnel vision. I could walk right into a wall.
I do.
And so, mm-hmm. And it's like, I always joke that all of my hides are double blind because I can't remember where I put them.
Right.
Looks the same. But I'm so busy watching the dog. It doesn't matter mm-hmm. where he goes. That's the mm-hmm. only thing I'm looking at. I'm not looking at anything else. So,
It was crazy. And Elizabeth, she remembered all of it. And I'm just like, damn.
She's not watching her dog. That's what I'd say to her.
No, she was that girl, okay. though. She is like so detail oriented. That's why we made a good team, because, yeah. you know, like we were opposite. So it was really
And
good.
Did she work a shepherd also?
Yes. Okay. Yes, she did. A working line shepherd. Yeah. Very, very high drive dog.
Nice.
Really nice boy. Yeah. Nice. So, yeah, that was crazy. And so, and then the next one that I did was Taiwan. There was actually a second earthquake in Turkey that was in Ankara, you know, uh-huh. But I didn't go to that because I was going to on a personal vacation thing. And I got to the airport and they're like, and I had the dog. And they were like, are you going to Turkey? And I'm like, no, I just got back from Turkey. And they're like, nope, there's another one, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm not. And I'm looking at my husband going like, I really want to go, but no, I better not. So didn't do that one. But then in 99, there was a big earthquake in Tolio, Taiwan. And we got deployed out there. And the crazy part of that, well, there were more than two things, but the things that stand out are we did the mid-air refueling,
oh,
right?
Boy.
And that was crazy. Yeah. You know, very interesting, you know, like, and then we got there and everything there is tile. It's tile on the inside. And it's tile on the outside. These buildings are just tile. And you put concrete dust on tile, and not to mention just the ceramic the edges, right? And how devastating they can be for soft tissue. And we didn't have any problems, but slick, just ridiculously slippery. Yeah, it was, and who would think, right? Yeah, and so, you know, it was challenging. It was definitely challenging there. You know, we searched everything we had to search. You know, it was one of those things that was kind of hard to get out of there, just culturally, you know, because it was just as much about recovery, you know, and what they wanted. And the way that the country's set up, you're working for like a county, you know, and they've got to release you to go to another county. And it, and that was a little bit difficult. But so we're going back to the airport to fly out when we're finally done, and they have an aftershock that's over seven point something, I can't remember, and they had buildings that just fell, you know. And I mean, a lot of these buildings, they like fell over at the base, you know, and the whole building was still intact, but like this like 30 story building fell over, you know. It was the oddest thing to look at and wrap your brain around. And if you were walking in them, I mean, you talk about vertigo, you know, it was crazy. But
it's like that Billie Eilish thing where she's on the roof.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but so we were at the hotel. We were up like on the 12th floor, something like that. We're hot, probably higher than that. But when that aftershock hit, man, you know, I just remember like in the closet with all the hangers in it was just going slamming from side to side, you know. And it was pretty crazy. I was in there with Marilyn Arway with her dog Ayla, and you know, we're just cross-legged on the floor, and it's like, oh shit. Yeah, wow. But
did you notice from going, you know, from the initial one, did you notice a confidence and just a I got this attitude in the dogs when they went from one to the next to the next? Because you cannot train for that. You cannot simulate it. So did they come and say, here we go again? Or did they come and say, own it?
No, they were like, been there, done that. Yeah. Yep. It's like, you know, drive. Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's the, you know, Garrett always said, like, you know, if you start out with a full tank, when you end up on a deployment, you know, you're going to lose some of that in travel. You're going to lose some of that in stress, you know, like, you need to at least have that half a tank. But if you started with a half a tank, you got nothing left. You know what I mean?
It's great analogy. There. And even from the perspective of the handler's going to negatively influence the dog. It's not the same. Yeah. You're putting off a vibe. They can smell it. Mm-hmm. It's different. It's definitely different.
Yes. You're under pressure. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And safety and, pressure.
Yes, exactly. I mean, there's a whole lot of things.
And it's uncomfortable. You know, it's not right. And it's.
Yeah. Yeah. That was for sure. But so, like, but the cool thing, Otto and I had this moment when that aftershock, that 7.0, and the buildings came down, they had a helicopter out there waiting for us. You know, and we got on the Chinook, and so we're like, it lands in a stadium, right? And so we're, you know, you got the wash and all that going on, and Otto, I've got my bags, and Otto's next to me, and I'm looking at the back of the Chinook, and I look at him, and we have this moment, you know, and he's like, you going? I'm like, I'm going. You going? He goes, let's go. You know, like, and it was so cool. It was, you know, and his hair was blowing, you know, like, it was just, that was him, you know. He was like, okay, this is it. All right, let's do it, you know.
And can you please dispel the myth that the live find disaster dogs get depressed?
Yes, I will dispel it. Okay, so these dogs work to find their, to do the task that they need to do to complete to get their pay, being that game of tug of war, whatever it's going to be. And they are completely, the drive for that game is what drives the search. And so when you train all the time, which you have to keep these dogs up, they are getting rewarded all the time. But when you go on a real deployment, you're working a long time without that dog finding somebody that's alive or finding some, you know, human remains, whatever it may be. And the dog starts to wonder, doubt whether
doubt
this
itself.
Is the same game, you know, because it's gone much yes. longer than what they're used to. And so that is it in a nutshell. I mean, if those look dogs, they roll in dead stuff. You know what I mean? Like they don't have
right.
that emotional
right.
attachment, to strangers, you know, in the rubble. And it's just not true. You know, I think, some of that comes from dogs that just don't have the drive to get out there and do it. Your job as a handler is to keep your dog up. You know what I
yeah.
mean? And, you know, I always say, like, when I'm teaching, that it's no different than if you go out there with a search cam and the battery's dead. Like, what are you looking at? You know, when you put it in the rubble, you're not looking at anything. You're just walking around sticking a dead search camera in the rubble. So when your dog
yeah.
needs a break or if he needs motivation, then your
yeah.
job is to get that taken care of somewhere where it's okay to do it, you know, and then bring the dog back refreshed and ready to go. And that's, you know, because just being out there and putting paws on the rubble, if the dog's not working, you're not doing anything. Like, you're not
right.
clearing anything, you know? So, you know, so that's something I really try to drive home with handlers, because it's not about who gets tired first. It's about taking care of your resource. Cause you only have so many dogs out there, and not only is it your best bud, you know, and your partner, but you know, he's out there to do a job. And if you let him just, you know, that battery go all the way out, then you got nothing.
Yeah.
You're not, yeah.
That, so where after, so then Otto and you were at the Pentagon.
Yeah, so
and
we did the Pentagon. And there was a funny moment for me, or a moment between him and I, like, because I, like I said, I had never done HR, human remains on rubble. And when we got to the embassy, or not the embassy, when we got to the Pentagon, we knew, because we were late, because we were tied up. Oh my God, we were in Washington State on a military base giving a canine search specialist course for FEMA to 30 handlers that were already certified, trying to get out of there to go to their, because their pagers were going off. It was crazy. But so when we got there, and I was lucky enough, Mike Tamala was my task force leader there, and he had called the house and said, let me know when you're in, because you're coming to, you're going to work this. And so I brought Otto, and I was, my plan being to switch him over, you know, on the
yep.
rubble. And
yep.
so I sent him up, you know, the face of where the slide was on the
yes.
Pentagon. And I said, find Fred, which was his recovery, you know, command.
Right.
And he went up, like took like two bounds up there. And then he turned around and he looked at me. And I said,
like, are you sure we're at the
I
right
know.
Place?
And he goes, you know what you just said there, right? It's like, you know, and I'm like, yeah, yeah. And I had somebody stand next to me, and I go, you know, like, I knew he was going to do this. And I go, good boy. Find Fred, right? And
yeah.
he like took a big couple steps, and then he looked at me again and he goes, okay, this is on you. And I was like, do it. right? And he just goes,
I can see him doing it.
Yeah.
I can see him doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he was just like, really? Yeah, really don't want to mess this up. Yeah, like, really? Wrong command? So it was, you know, and then he just switched, you know, it was yep. good. But, you know, he was just that dog. We were connected, like, ridiculously. He was just, you know, I was very lucky to have him and have all the folks, you know, to help me with him. So after that, it was Katrina, which was a different dog. That was Zorro. Zorro. I had a dog between Otto and Czar. And his name was Draco, and he was amazing. He's certified with another handler. He was just that dog that worked for the work. Mm-hmm. And super talented, but he, you know, 8 years he was certified, and he almost went to Iran. You know, we were on the plane and all that, yeah. but it just, we kept getting turned around on that, so he never made it out there. But yeah, poor guy, but he was super talented boy.
And that, it's another good point. I remember I didn't work disaster, but I ended up working more disasters than a lot of disaster dog people that I know.
Right.
There was a time, mm-hmm. now, of course, with, you know, everything going on, it seems like working a disaster dog, you actually will get deployments. But there was a real, so to speak, drought for
yes.
those handlers where you could have the best dog in the world, you just weren't getting out there to, there's no way to get out there. But they worked hard, they had great dogs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you never, like, any challenge that they got or any time at training, you know, they weren't missing anybody.
No.
You know, like, they just didn't get that, their ticket punched, you know, that's rough, you know, and I was on a team that went out all the time, you know.
Well,
and
that's the thing, because you were on one of the two teams that went international.
Right.
But it's another thing that I think a lot of people may not realize about.
Don't understand. Work. Yep.
Is the training is constant through the life, the working life of the dog. Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing is too, that if the, you know, I tell handlers, like new handlers, if the training doesn't drive you, if you don't enjoy
the process
of training,
yeah.
you know, if you're in this for deployments,
yep.
You're going to have a problem, you know, like, yes, yeah. everybody wants their dog. They want a chance for their dog to get out there and work and make it all, you know, get that full circle and show how amazing their dog does, how amazing they are together. But it just doesn't happen in this world, you know, on FEMA task forces. It's lucky. If you go, it's lucky, because even if your team goes, you know, you've got 12 dogs on that team or 10 certified dogs on that team. Everybody didn't go. They take four, you know? Yeah. So, you know, your team may have got called, but it doesn't mean you're going.
Well, and then aside from that, I think what the only live recoveries have been in Haiti.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, Turkey, we had them in Turkey as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
decades ago. So
right.
it's,
yeah.
I mean, especially when you're responding to an earthquake mm-hmm. is a higher probability. Responding mm-hmm. to a bombing is not a good probability.
No, it's right. The percussion is totally
yeah.
different. Yeah.
And a crush as opposed mm-hmm. to spaces, probably. Mm-hmm. So the dogs are doing their job. They can't help it that there isn't somebody there to mm-hmm. find it. I mean,
yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. And then a lot of the, you know, I they've gotten better, you know, the regional responses and things, but, you know, I mean, there was a time that it just took so long to get out the door. You know, the process was, it was just so frustrating, you know, that, I mean, you got to get you got to get the team there, you know, like, and that really, that's political, you know, so you've got to wait until that whole process, you know, kind of, you know, happens or doesn't happen, but, you know, that can be super frustrating too. So, you know, there's a lot. And then, you know, coming from wilderness, like, you know, what do? They give you your assignment, right? And you go out and you do it and you finish it, you come back in, you get another assignment. It was very difficult, in the beginning for me to like be you know, everybody's in the boo and, you know, the base of operations and whatever and doing whatever. And it's like, there's people out there, you know, like we got to get these dogs out. We got to get these people out, you know, like because it's a lot of hurry up and wait. You know, just,
but there's huge logistics. There's huge threats.
Yeah.
There's, you know, you've got to have the safety, engineers check the it whole, to make sure. Yeah. Yeah. Everything's safety first.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, but it was just like, geez, you know, yeah. That was my inner battle, you know, but
yeah.
So yeah. And then, so Katrina was super interesting because I was an evaluator at Ohio, was doing a FEMA test for teams, and I was an evaluator out there. And when Katrina hit, and we were watching it, you know, like at night, you know, at dinner, you know, just watching it on the screen, and it kept getting bigger and bigger. And Ohio got called up, but they didn't have enough dogs, and so they asked if I could deploy with them so that they could go out the door. And after, you know, a couple phone calls and whatnot, I got permission to do that. And so I was going out with a team that I didn't really know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out great, you know, but it was, I knew the handlers, which was, and they were all good handlers. So it was totally positive, but it was just a different dynamic for me, you know, than seeing the people that I'm used to working with. And so that was a little different, and that was just ridiculously hot and humid and, you know, just
flooded,
or if it wasn't flooded, it was mud, you know, that you had all the way up to your knees eventually by the time you got back, you know, and, it was a lot of, it was just boots on the ground, just, you know, getting through whatever you had to get through. And I had just certified Zorro. And he was he was just a really cool dog. He was imported from Slovakia and he's a bicolor and just, I mean, he was just one big muscle, you know, and a big broad head. And, you know, he had a serious side and, it was
so much for wanting a little female.
I know. Right. I know. He kind of came my way, you know, all my dogs have found me, you know, it's a crazy thing, but it's been that way. And they've all worked, you know, so, but yeah, it was just endless walking and heat and the dogs were hot and you just didn't have, you know, you didn't have, vehicles following you, you know, you had to hook up with the military to get water or whatever. And it was just, you're kind of out there just, you know, boots on the ground, just doing it. And then we got back from that and I went out with Virginia to, so I was in Gulfport, Mississippi, on the first one with Ohio and then, went back to went to New Orleans with Fairfax, so you know, really got the whole lay of the land on that. And the water had gone out from New Orleans when we got there, so it was just again, you know,
clearing yard to yard, building to building.
Yeah, that's just it, you know. And it was just, oh, I hear it. So it was just a little, you know, sometimes it was a little confusing, you know, as to what your orders really were and, you know, whether you're going in or not going in, doing the perimeter of the house, you know, hot or not, that kind of thing. So it was, you know, there was a lot of crazy stuff going on there too, as far as, you know, looting and just people kind of losing it.
Yeah.
So, a lot of frustration with, you know, locally. So it was kind of crazy. So, and then we've done a whole bunch of hurricanes, you know, after that, cause we're on the East Coast, you know, so you know, hurricanes, but as far as working deployments, you know, the next one was Haiti, you know, and that was a school, collapse when we went there in, 2008 and it was a school that had collapsed that was you know, in Haiti, they kind of build everything. It's like on a shelf on a mountain, you know, that's kind of like going into this drop off, insane, kind of, valleys. And it's, you know, they're not built well. And that was kind of crazy. It wasn't a big area, but it was really dangerous because, everything that collapsed was kind of slanted down towards, the bottom of the, you know, hundreds and hundreds of feet, drop off
slope.
Yeah. And they had these, chickens that were territorial, and they were, I kid you not, like our badass dogs, right?
They, angry chickens.
They gave respect and space to these chickens. It was kind of funny, you know, but they were calling them yard birds, but, cause they were just like, this is my yard, you know? But you just, you know, it was another where you had to, let your dog work, but you were just like hoping that they didn't slide into the, you know, into a place where they couldn't, recover from. So it was crazy, but I mean, everybody did good there. It was all good. So there was that. And then, yeah. And then, I mean, really we had a couple of hurricanes and we had the Chile earthquake, which we didn't, you know, didn't do. It was another kind of go, no go kind of thing. And then it was the Haiti earthquake. And
so when did you go to National Search Dog Foundation?
I went there in 2012.
In 12. Yeah. Okay, so after all of these.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Haiti, you know, was in 2010 and, got a lot of work in, a lot of teams were there, and just a lot of work and just a lot of sadness. So many people were killed in that. And, you know, so you know, I've got a lot of visions of family members outside of, you know, when they last saw, like, you know, a man, the rest of his family, you know, was in the building, you know, and he's there. Yeah. And I mean, just endless, you know, endless pictures like that. But 2 years later, I left. I resigned from Virginia One to take the job as head trainer for Search Dog Foundation in SoCal, and moved out, moved everything, you know, out there. And it was really good. You know, like it was quite the challenge because I was involved in building everything and all their props and rubble piles and, you know, like, because I'd been on so many deployments that I could put real world stuff in everything. And I'd already built a couple rubble piles, you know, along the way anyway. So it was really good. And trained a bunch of dogs there. It was challenging for sure. Set up their whole training program, built their props. You know, it was really cool to be a part of all that. Yeah.
Their dogs are predominantly rescues, correct?
They are. Yeah.
But that's got its own set of challenges.
It does. You know, I mean, it really is all about a screening process, you know, and, you know, because you got to do it you know, an efficient amount of time, you know, like, so you can't be dealing with a lot of the behavioral problems, but, you know, there's some really nice, strong, drivey dogs out there, as we know that, their behavioral problems are that they're bored, you know, and
yes, exactly.
That they nipped somebody, you know, while they picked up a ball or whatever, you know, so.
Or they're just too much.
Yeah.
They're just too much. It's like, I expected a high and lay drive, sweet golden retriever.
Yeah.
And I have a hunting line lunatic
what
that wants
is
it
this,
still.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, like when they came in to Search Dog, a lot of them, I mean, they were so checked out, you know, but when you took that toy out, like they were like, you know, there it is.
Yep.
And, And it was just so cool to see how they evolved, you know, and just really just bought into it of like, finally, you know what I mean? So yeah. I have a
purpose. Somebody gets me.
Exactly. Get me. Yeah. You know, so that was, I mean, it was very, fulfilling, you know, as, because I, you know, I was a pointy ear trainer. So, I mean, now I was training, you know, border collies and Labradors and mixes and, you know, all that. And, you know, my thing was, I'm not going to put a weak dog out, you know, like, because I'm an evaluator, I'm an instructor, I'm going to see these dogs, you know, like, and they're going to be a part of the system. And I want to be like, yeah, you know, yeah, I trained that dog, you know, and I
Well, you're also matching them though. You've got mm-hmm. a two-prong thing. Number one,
yeah, handlers.
You're taking dogs that are rescues mm-hmm. that have an uncertain background,
right.
or certainly haven't been cultivated the way you would prefer them to be cultivated.
Right.
You've got that obstacle. Then you're pairing them with generally firefighters mm-hmm. who, although wonderful people, they're not in it to win it because of dog training.
Right.
They're like, hey, I need a tool and
right.
I better just do the job because I'm a guy and it has to work.
Right. Right.
So that's not necessarily
productive
easy either.
Yeah.
Well, it can be productive and I'm sure there's a lot of good handlers, but
there
the
are.
Expectations matching them up with somebody who may not have talent mm-hmm. and may just be like, you know what? He's supposed to just be trained and do it.
Yeah. It was interesting, you know, like, everybody says in the interview all the right things, you know,
of
but yeah, you know, but then you get them out there and you start seeing that jaw clenching, you know, and all these things. So, you know, there were some, you know, some of them that thought they made it and didn't. And, you know, I had to take back a couple dogs.
Yeah. So what are you doing these days? I guess you've got a business, you're training dogs.
I am training dogs. This COVID thing is kind of muffled a couple of things. So Heritage Canine is my company, and you can find it on Facebook. And I've got dogs for disaster. I've got Live Find or HR, and
Human Remains for those who don't.
Yes,
know.
Human Remains. Sorry. Yes, the politically correct way to say it. And then I've got a black powder dog she was supposed to go working in the schools. And now, you know, that's kind of not happening. So I'm trying to find a place for her, and she's amazing. She's a Wheaton Terrier. She's to die for. Her work ethic is ridiculous. Her drive, she will not stop. And she's so focused and she's so reliable, you know, that I just need to find a place for her, you know, so that she can do some work. But I mean, and I can put her on other odor, but yeah, her name is Ziggy, and she is a she's a cool chick. She's yeah. super cute. She looks like Benji, and
yeah,
you know, she could go in anywhere and just completely befuddle them with what she can do.
Wow.
Yeah, she is intense. So and a really super fun dog. But and then I've done I did a peanut alert dog for this one of my firefighter friends, his captain, his little boy, who has ridiculously, you know, I mean, they've been dealing with anaphylaxis, like, you know, had some really
super
close
scary.
Calls with
yeah.
him. Yeah. And you know, man, as a mom, holy moly, you know, you just yeah. don't, you can't, you can never rest. You know,
no.
Because it comes out of nowhere. And so this little chocolate lab puppy started him, and man, he is spot on. Like, and the mom works him because, you know, the boy's too young. But right. Yeah, they've got all kinds of families that ask him to come over, you know, and search because they've got somebody coming to their house, or he'll work anywhere. I mean, he's phenomenal. Yeah, like phenomenal.
So when you're doing that kind of like a peanut detection,
mm-hmm.
you would think it's kind of static, but you actually can have the dog search it out, which would then build his drive to indicate, right? Because that's part of the fun.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, so everything started with just baseline peanut flour dilutions, you know what I mean? And then, and then went on to different kinds of things. But yeah, he'll search a plate of food, you know, he'll clear it, you know, or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he's not.
And does he have a clear, does he have a clear indication and a positive?
Oh yeah.
Or just a positive. Okay. So he's got to turn away.
Oh no, he's going to, no, he will sit and he will stare at it, you know? And,
okay.
Like, and, you know, so he's not going anywhere. Whereas otherwise he's just a happy clunk, you know, silly Labrador. Like, so it's very easy to read. And, I mean, I would love to do more of them because I feel like that's a dog that, you know, kind of, I don't know, they work every day. You know, they're saving a life every day, you know, whatever kind of allergy there is. It was fun to work it out as a trainer, you know, like to do the program, design it and stuff. And, you know, and it was because I took it very seriously. Not on my watch, you know, so it's good. I love, you know, I just, I'm like you, I love training dogs. I love, bringing out their potential. You know, they make.
Are you doing any, are you doing any seminars or are you just kind of doing your own in-house training?
No, I'm, everything's kind of shelved right now. Right. You know, so I'm also doing nose work. I'm a judge, you know, for nose work, and that's been fun, a lot of fun. And, but no, I've got some workshops that are all kind of laid out. We just got to open back up again, you know, so, none of them are right here and, you know, it's going to involve flying, you know, or a lot of driving and people just aren't quite there yet, you know, so, we'll be doing.
Well, at least you live in Southern California, because in another 2 months I'm going to be shut down because I'm not going to want to be out when it's 30 below.
Well, so, come on down, sister.
I'm coming down. I got a seminar next week, and then I get another one in Southern California in a month. But
there you go, and it'll be Sonia squared.
It's going to be fun. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So
any parting words of advice or favorite things you can't live without, or things that you feel like, I wish I had said that?
You know, I don't know. Not really. You know, I mean, I will say, you know, as far as Asta goes, and at Montecito, I'm just so thrilled that she got to deploy. Because this little girl,
so that's your current dog, and you did the Montecito.
Yeah, monster. And she just, she just passed, and so, but she trained so many handlers, and she's a feisty, sassy little girl, and she was a perfectionist, you know. So she taught all these firefighters how to do a correct foos, you know, and ward correctly, and don't step on my feet, and. You know, the whole, and man, she would just run them up one side down and the other until they got it right. And then she'd give them that golden, you know, just ta-da. And you could just see the light bulb go on. And, you know, she's an amazing girl. And my first.
What's your favorite then, working the males or the females?
Ooh, I can't do that. But what I will say is, only because I've had so many great males, but but what I will say is that she opened a whole nother door for me. And you know, from being at Search Dog Foundation and working through a lot of dogs, the girls train up so much easier. You know, if you have the right dog, they are, they start out a little slower because they want to get it right. You know, but boy, once they're bought in, man, you know, they are a whole nother, it's very freaking cool. Very cool.
Well, I wanted to thank you for all of your time and your wonderful insights and stories. And, you and I will have to definitely get together at some point. Yes. Maybe we can collaborate on something.
That would be fun.
Have some kind of a fun training.
Right. And, I think we could come up with something.
Yeah. And I hope everybody will excuse my rooster and my whining dog. And
I love it.
I've got barking going on, all kinds of things.
Oh, it's,
but most
yeah,
of it
it's
I can
dinner
mute
time.
Out.
Yep.
I fed them beforehand thinking that might be okay, but apparently it wasn't.
It's still dinner time.
Exactly.
All right.
Well, stay safe, and I hope the fires leave you alone.
Yeah.
And stay in touch.
Cool.
And thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. It's been great talking to you.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I so appreciate you all listening. Please stay safe and healthy, and come on back for more. Take care.